Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And we have come to the end of our week-long series on climate change or climate collapse or climate emergency, as we heard different people's preferred language this week. We did the series as part of the joint initiative put forth by our colleagues over at the Columbia Journalism Review, The Guardian, and The Nation that wound up involving 300-plus news organizations to kind of flood the world with stories about the climate in this week leading up to the UN Climate Summit, which is next week here in New York. We also invited you all to join us in the Brian Lehrer Show Plastic Challenge, in which we challenged ourselves to notice how much plastic we come in touch with and see how low we could go this week with single-use plastic, since plastic production is an increasing contributor to greenhouse gas emissions as well as ground level pollution. Now, you didn't have to be perfect. We never asked for that. The exercise was not meant to shame anyone, and we didn't want to claim purity or virtue over anyone else. We just invited you to reduce your use of single-use plastic to the extent that you could and wanted to, and we invited you to take a picture of something during the week that shows a success or a struggle in your plastic challenge effort and post it to Instagram or Twitter using the hashtag plastic challenge. Dozens of you participated and tagged us in your Instagram photos and shared some of your struggles, your successes, and your tips for eliminating one-time use plastics. And there were many more people who also called to let us know you weren't on social media, so you emailed us your photos. Thanks to you too for participating in this week's plastic challenge. On the struggle side, we had a lot of people noticing that their snacks come in single-use plastic packaging. Clean Montclair on Instagram shared pictures of his favorite snacks, including a turmeric tea bag and kiwi fruit, avocado, and cheese. They all come packaged with single-use plastic, all that natural stuff. On Twitter, at KJ noticed that their dental items are all single-use. Also on Twitter, Bike Love NY asked why their dietary supplements bottle comes wrapped in a non-recyclable single-use plastic. You know how you have to take that little bit of plastic off a lot of bottles before you can get to the lid? On the success side, there were many people who reused your supposedly one-use plastics. We had OBU8 on Instagram, who painted the plastic lid from their cup of coffee and turned it into a piece of art that could be hung up. Seafalk on Instagram shared that they asked for paper only when buying deli meats and cheeses. The stores where Seafalk on Instagram shops have been glad to wrap their deli meats in paper rather than plastic, we are told. Jorekta Kogan, probably mispronounced that name, on Instagram shared that she wraps her children's snacks in a fabric bandana rather than a Ziploc bag. And now we'd like to hear from you about your experiences in the past week. If you did the plastic challenge, how was this for you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As we're opening the phones for you now on single-use plastic, especially if you took part in our project this week, but really even if you didn't, what do you find easy and what do you find hard about cutting down on single-use plastics? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And back with us to take your calls is Judith Ink, who was also here last Friday to help us kick off the Plastic Challenge. She's founder of the group Beyond Plastics and a former EPA administrator for Region 2. That means she was in charge of the federal EPA for New York and New Jersey, as well as Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands and 8 Native American nations. And she is currently a visiting professor at Bennington College in Vermont. Judith, thanks so much for coming back on and doing this one more time with us. We really appreciate all your help.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for putting the spotlight on this issue, Brian.
So I'm going to start with a story of an easier and a harder thing for me this week. Mm-hmm. Easy was to carry around a cloth bag and refuse plastic bags at store cash registers. Harder was realizing that some things I want to buy, like these delicious long cucumbers at Trader Joe's, come individually wrapped, and they don't sell them loose. Is that an increasing trend?
Yes, and it's pretty nutty because it, you know, the cucumber is probably capable of making its way through commerce without being wrapped in plastic, like bananas and avocados and so many other things. What's interesting, though, is the many shoppers at Trader Joe's just have had it with all of the over packaging and plastic packaging, and they've sent many emails and phone calls to Trader Joe's, and very recently Trader Joe's said they will substantially change and reduce their use of plastic packaging. I am waiting to see that. But they have made that public pledge. And so that is encouraging. And it's also a great example of people voicing their concerns directly to their stores and getting results. And I hear a lot from people about supermarkets. You know, you're careful with bags and refillable water bottles, and a stroll through any supermarket aisle is a real problem. So in response to that, we have put a model letter up on our website, beyondplastics.org, that you can tailor any way you want. But it's a letter to managers of supermarkets asking them to reduce the sale of products that are overpackaged in plastic. And so folks should go check that out and maybe even hand deliver it the next time they're at Trader Joe's or whatever shop they go to.
Good one, and good idea to make it easy for people by setting up a template, and then they can just use that and send it in, or as you just suggested, hand it in. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our listeners wrote that they're not willing yet to simply boycott any produce that's individually wrapped, but their solution to that, or their compromise, is to set a quota for themselves. So just a few per week of produce that's wrapped that way, if it's really a part of their diet. And so that's another way, but yours is really good because it attacks it systemically. Another one for me, easy, was to not use the totally unnecessary plastic lid and plastic straw that you would get at, you know, many kinds of restaurants, fast food, and step up from fast food. Like I went to Chipotle in my case. Why use that lid and straw when you can just do what you do at home and drink right out of the cup? But harder was that I got a cup of soup at, I'll say the name of the place, it was Pret a Manger. And my first thought was that this is okay, you know, because I was looking to avoid plastic. And I thought this is okay because it looked like a paper-based cup. And it was. But then when I got to my seat, I realized that the lid on the soup was plastic. Plus, I needed one of their disposable plastic spoons. Aha! And now I don't have a solution for the lid, but I remembered that we give out sometimes these WNYC sporks. You know, a reusable plastic item with a spoon on one end and a fork on the other. And I know people also get these small packs of metal or bamboo cutlery that they carry around. I think I saw you with one last week. But the issue was, what do I do about the lid?
And you were dining in the restaurant?
I was.
Yeah, so that's easier than if it was to go. I think you my experience is you've got to look deep into the eyes of the server because they're used to doing it all day long. It's not an easy job. You look deep in their eyes and you say, "No lid, please." And you can, I know you can carry it from the counter to the table without spilling.
Right. Of course, in this case, in that chain, these soup containers with lids are already out on the shelves and you help yourself to one.
Okay. So then I think it's a conversation with the manager and saying, can you have some without lids, and explaining why. And they'll probably recognize your voice and cooperate.
Right. Now, you showed me your portable cutlery last week.
Yes.
Is there a kind you like?
I got mine from my local NPR station, WAMC. It was a giveaway, and it's bamboo fork, spoon, knife in a little carrying case. I carry it in my purse everywhere I go because I particularly want to avoid those plastic utensils, which are a major litter source. But there are many, many, many different brands that are out there. The other thing people can do is simply take a spoon or a spoon and a fork and put it in some kind of protective wrapping and carry it in their purse. You don't have to wear a backpack. You don't have to buy anything special.
There you go. And we learned, and I'll just reinforce this so people don't pollute the recycling stream with it. We learned on yesterday's show from our guest from the Lower East Side Ecology Center that those plastic forks and spoons and knives that you get in a restaurant or you get with takeout are not recyclable, even though right. they're hard. They don't want you right. to put those in with the other hard plastic recyclables because they're not actually recyclable and they'll pollute the stream, make it harder to sort, and some of your legitimate recyclables may not go through. You agree with that, right?
Totally agree. You should only try to recycle anything that's marked number one, number two, or number five. And there's a bill pending in the New York City Council that would only allow you to get plastic straws upon request. And there is a similar bill, only plastic utensils upon request, because so many people have had the experience of you get takeout, you've got utensils at home, and even if you ask them not to put single-use utensils in the bag, you know, 8 times out of 10, it arrives with, you know, so many napkins and an army can feed off of the condiments and other mm-hmm. things they put into the bag. So I actually think this would save businesses money and be good for the planet if the city council passed these two bills, plastic straws only upon request and plastic utensils for takeout only upon request.
Natasha in Claremont, you're on WNYC. Hi, Natasha.
Hi there. I have found it goes a little beyond single use, but soap in all forms. I've now recently switched from using liquid laundry detergent in plastic bottles back to the old-fashioned powder in cardboard boxes. Also, a bar of soap, not liquid hand soap. Right. My bigger dilemma is dish soap. Not quite sure about that one yet, but.
Yeah, those are really good recommendations. And for your dishes, I am only aware of liquid soap. But if you were to occasionally shop at a food co-op or an environmentally oriented store, sometimes you can bring your old bottle and have it refilled. Mm. I realize a lot of people are not going to do that. But that is an option for dish soap.
But wait, how did they wash the dishes 100 years ago before there were plastic bottles? I have no idea.
I don't know.
All right.
A lot of hot water.
Somebody call up and tell us how your grandparents washed their dishes. But another thing in the same bucket of, the same category that Natasha was talking about, one of my colleagues here at WNYC, who's really into this, says she uses bar shampoo.
Right.
Because, of course, shampoo comes in plastic bottles, and she says she uses bar shampoo specifically to avoid yet another piece of plastic.
Yeah, that's a great development. Shampoo bars that just come in a little recyclable cardboard box. And there are some products that will be both shampoo bars and soap bars. What I'm concerned about is these common sense consumer choices are often more expensive and you can only purchase them online. And I think retail stores that are losing lots of business to online shopping, if they were smart, they would offer things like shampoo bars and bamboo toothbrushes and things like that right in their own store. I mean, I don't want to name too many names, but Whole Foods has a little section, but it's kind of a boutique-y section. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have the shampoo bars, but if I was a supermarket executive, which is something I never aspire to, I would look at all of these really innovative, environmentally sound products and get them, mainstream them, get them right in, on supermarket shelves so people don't have to spend extra time and extra money looking around.
You mentioned toothbrushes. We got that question from one of our listeners on social. What do I do about toothbrushes? You're supposed to use them for a few months and throw them out.
Yeah, that is true. There are a couple options. One is food co-ops and health food stores. And online, you can get bamboo toothbrushes. So you're not throwing out a petrochemical product. There are also online you can get where you take the brush part of the toothbrush off and you just put it on and off the handle.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not throwing the handle out every time. We don't want dentists mad at us by saying just keep, using your toothbrush
forever and ever.
Forever.
No.
But I'm intrigued by the taking the head of the brush off and just throwing out the brush part.
We will continue in a minute on this, including with a call from a listener calling us Brooklyn from Brooklyn, who's, I think, frustrated with some of the options. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we are debriefing our Brian Lehrer Show Plastic Challenge, now that the week-long challenge has ended, with Judith Enck, founder of Beyond Plastics and a former EPA administrator for Region 2, which includes New York, New Jersey, 8 Native American nations, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And she is currently a visiting professor at Bennington College in Vermont, where she's engaging students on the Beyond Plastics work and some other things. Before we take another call, I wonder, Judith, if you could give us your take on plastics and climate change, because I used to think of plastic pollution as mostly a ground-level problem, including it pollutes waterways and it kills wildlife and other hazards, but I've been reading recently how it's a growing contributor to global warming, too. Do you have a handle on how and how much?
Yes, I do, unfortunately. And so it's, really appropriate that we're talking today, the day of the impressive student climate strike. A lot of carbon emissions are pumped into the atmosphere when you make plastic. It is a petrochemical product, mostly made from fracked gas now. So that's a switch. It used to be made from coal. I'm sorry, it used to be made from oil and chemicals. Now it's made from chemicals and ethane, a byproduct of fracking. So fracking emits methane into the environment itself, and then making the ethane into ethylene, which is now the building block for single-use plastic packaging, emits massive amounts of carbon into the environment, along with other contaminants like benzene. So you've got the front end, you've got the extraction and production, and then on the waste end, if any of the plastic is burned at garbage incinerators, for instance, a large amount of New York City's trash is trucked over to the Ironbound neighborhood in Newark, New Jersey, where it's burned at a massive Covanta garbage incinerator. When you burn that plastic, you will also get significant emissions. So I tell my students, we cannot solve the climate change problem without addressing plastic production and plastic pollution. Projections are that by 2030, if the generation of plastic stays on track the way the petrochemical industry is planning for, the carbon emissions just from making plastic will be the equivalent of emissions released by about 295 new 500-megawatt coal-fired plants. So as the world tries to step back from coal plants and electrical generation from fossil fuels, it's not a coincidence that the fossil fuel industry and the plastic production industry is working together to find new markets for fossil fuels, and that would be for single-use plastic production.
Mm. A lesson from one of our colleagues who said he had to work up the courage to ask for his lunch panini, a lunch panini, in paper, not plastic. He says the deli guy looked at him like he was dumb and said, yeah, it's a panini. We were going to give it to you in paper anyway. And he says it was embarrassing, but at least now he knows that asking is easy. Brooklyn in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call. Okay, I'm going to, I wanted to participate to the challenge last week to take pictures of my apartment building's garbage collection area. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that, you know, out of respect to my neighborhood and my neighbors, I decided not to do that. Because here's the problem. I'm a perennial gentrifier. I lived in Park Slope. I lived in Ditmas Park. And now I live in deep Brooklyn, okay, where it has not been gentrified yet. And I am a well-disciplined recycling person. However, now I feel like, in this neighborhood, I feel like a fool. Because I recycle, I have three different sets of bags in my kitchen. However, once they go down to the building's garbage area, they are all mixed up. And listen, these communities, these neighborhoods are the larger populations of Brooklyn. And it's people are not informed, educated, and the recycling is not enforced here. Mm-hmm. And in the absence of any reach out to these neighborhoods, I feel like we're playing in a sandbox, educating each other on and on. Whereas,
well, when you say these neighborhoods, are you talking about working class neighborhoods and that meticulous recycling like you do is kind of an elite concern?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, because I cannot even crack in and establish a recycling pattern, because in the collection areas, in apartment buildings where there are 60, 70 units, there is no enforcement. There is no discipline. It's not being done.
Brooklyn, I'm going to leave it there. And she called in as Brooklyn and Brooklyn from Brooklyn because she didn't want to give a real name and insult her neighbors and be identified. Out of respect for her neighbors, that was that. But Judith, do you see a class issue here? Because that's really what the caller is raising.
You know, I don't. I worked on the original law that required mandatory recycling back in 1988. And what I heard regularly from lawmakers is, well, I'll recycle, but my neighbors won't. You know, I'll do it, but my kids won't. And what needs to happen is you need to make it convenient for people. And I think your caller raised a really good point that you have to constantly educate. There's a big problem with so many people staying at Airbnbs from out of town, and they don't know what the recycling rules are. New York City doesn't have what's called single stream recycling, where you mix all the recyclables all together. So I had a similar frustration in my building in Brooklyn, and I can't tell you how much time I would spend on a Saturday just going down to the recycling area and just resorting. And that was easier if it's not, you know, sorted at all. But I would recommend a few things. One is the caller should talk to the building manager and say there needs to be signs. You can get, there's very good education material from New York City Department of Sanitation. I put signs up in my apartment. I slid the flyers under people's doors. And then, you know, it's really up to the building manager to make sure that there are bins, that it's clearly marked. A lot of times there's not. And then also, I have found New York City to be pretty effective in handing out tickets if you mess up on recycling. I was concerned about this in my relatively small apartment building in Brooklyn. And within a few weeks, and I didn't call in, we got a $450 fine from sanitation.
That'll get your
attention. And that got everyone's attention, yeah. And things really, really improved. But I think people in working class neighborhoods and low income neighborhoods are interested in protecting the environment and recycling as compared to more affluent neighborhoods. It's a matter of making it easy for people and making sure everyone knows the rules.
Hey, we have breaking news about this. This just came in during the show. This version is from Inc. magazine, and the headline is, Amazon just bowed to employee pressure and agree to use 100% clean energy by 2030. And the next line is, Amazon employees plan to walk out as part of today's global climate strike, and it seems to have already gotten results.
That is fantastic news. And I also implore Jeff Bezos and Amazon employees now to pivot to the outrageous amount of plastic packaging that they use shipping their products. We need Amazon and other big shippers to use less plastic when they ship you material and to use their innovative skills and come up with some reusable, returnable packaging. So this is indeed good news that they're shifting to renewables. But for Amazon, there's so much more that needs to be done.
Russell in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Russell.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I told your screener, one of the remarks I had was I work in Midtown Manhattan. I'm in my mid-30s, and you know, when we go out for lunch, I'll often ask for no plastic bag, and I see some of my younger colleagues doing the same. She it sounds like this new bill does address that, that, you know, stores and companies will have to but default to not offering such bags. But what about a bag tax? I know I was visiting Connecticut this summer, and I was delighted when I had to pay 10 cents for a bag at Walmart. And it seems to have done a great job there, even though people are grumbling. And then just the last thing, especially on food delivery services, MealPal, et cetera, the packaging is so outrageous. I wonder if, you know, there's a way of taxing either the materials at the production level or the companies, because, you know, we can all take a very small action, but unless we get to a level of addressing this at a company level, our small additive actions don't add up to a lot.
I think, if
CBS or Duane Reade didn't give me a default plastic bag, that would do a lot more of a benefit than, you know, being careful about my plastic toothbrush.
And they're going to keep doing it until policy tells them that that they're not allowed. Russell, thank you. Please call us again. Judith, we're almost out of time. Respond to him and state your number one or two policy prescriptions for really dealing with this systemically instead of individually.
Well, New York State will ban all plastic bags in retail effective March. And New York City will also have a 5-cent fee on paper. So that really helps. But on the systemic problems, we really need state legislation that deals particularly with food delivery, the Amazons of the world. We need environmental standards for that packaging so they don't keep over packaging. I am afraid companies are not going to change on their own, and we need the New York State legislature to deal with it.
One more quick one from a listener. Damien writes on Twitter, the single-use packaging for my daily contact lenses, the challenge that we did, has made me rethink wearing contacts at all. Do you have a solution for daily contact lens wearers?
I do not, but I'm glad he is paying attention to it.
And we leave it there with Judith Enck, founder of the Beyond Plastics Environmental Campaign. Under President Obama, she was the EPA administrator for what they call Region 2, which is New York and New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and 8 tribal nations. She was previously the Deputy Environment Commissioner for New York State, and she is now a senior fellow at the Center for Advanced Political Action at Bennington College in Vermont, where she is engaging students in conjunction with the Beyond Plastics campaign. Thank you so much for being such a great partner and advisor on this. People really learned a lot from you in these two appearances. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.